Are we good? Are we good? My brain would be like, yeah, man, you're just not doing life right, though.
Yeah.
I'd be like, who the fuck are you to judge how I live my life? Why can't you just accept, like, why can't you just enjoy life? And they're like, that's not why I'm in your life.
Yeah.
And you're like, that's exactly why we became friends in the first place, is you're supposed to like guide me through life in a beautiful way.
Yeah.
And they're just like, yeah, that's not what I signed up for. You said something earlier before we started, and you said, I was just kind of talking about like general anxiety and stuff. And you're like, you said something really great. Or maybe I was talking about trauma, whatever. But you were just mentioning, you're like, you gotta tap into that. Like almost in a sense, like you gotta face it. And not in an aggressive way, but it almost like you gotta shine a light on it. And I thought that was so cool, because it's like, for a huge period of my life, I was like avoiding the light, if you will. It's like, I kind of didn't want like the searchlight to hit me. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to face trauma. I didn't want to face anxiety. I didn't want to face, you know, depression. I didn't want to feel any of these emotions that were so painful to feel and uncomfortable to feel. And so that's why I drank so much, right? And it's because I was trying to just avoid feeling these feelings
totally
that weren't good feelings. At the end of the day, as people, it's like, what we want to feel is, we want to feel genuine peace, genuine joy,
love.
We want to feel love. And when you're not feeling that, it's pretty fucking scary, and it's extremely scary. It's extremely lonely. And the whole time that, you know, I was experiencing these very intense feelings of depression, of anxiety, of, you know, stress, all these different emotions, I would drink to drown out the thoughts. I would drink to drown out those feelings, because they were so fucking painful.
Yeah.
They were excruciatingly painful, worse than any physical pain I had ever felt in my entire life. And it wasn't, believe it or not, until I shined a light on these things, that the pain started to kind of heal and mend itself, you know, by me being like, you know, I am an alcoholic. I do need help. I don't have control over my drinking, and I need to get sober. And it's like, it was so scary for so long, 'cause I'm like, this is the only thing. Alcohol right now, my drinking, my addiction, is the only thing protecting me from this pain. But it's also the biggest thing in my mind. I thought it was the only thing protecting me from this pain, but ironically, it was the biggest creator of my pain.
Yeah.
At the exact same time. So it's like, in a sense, I would let out just as much water as I would let in every fucking day. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't going anywhere. I was staying in the same place, and my life was just getting worse. And so what I'm trying to say is, essentially, it wasn't until I got sober and shined a light on myself and said, this is who I am. I am an alcoholic. And there is zero shame in that. It is a beautiful thing to be like, I need help. I am an addict, whatever it might be, that you really start to heal. Because for the longest time, I felt so much fucking shame.
Yeah.
About being an alcoholic, about being an addict, because I felt like I was different than what society would accept of me. And I was not worthy of friendships, of relationships, of all these things. And there's something that has to be wrong with me, because I can't control my drinking. I can't control my substance. Mm-hmm. I should be so embarrassed of that, and I should hide. But it wasn't until, you know, hiding is the creation of all this darkness.
Yeah.
That it's when you step into the light and say, this is who I am. I need help. This is the problem I'm struggling with. That you shine that light on others, and you allow others to ultimately see you and come into your life.
Yeah.
And so that's the, to your point about talking about, you know, facing these feelings, it's the scariest thing to do, and it's a leap of faith, but it's ultimately what, you know, brings in your highest self, I believe, and brings in the most amazing experiences in life and the most amazing people. You know what I mean?
I do. It's so, how you get in touch with who you really are now.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, all of these things, all these feelings that we're trying to escape from,
yeah,
are feelings from the past. that were too intense to feel.
Yeah, dude.
So we buried them.
Of course.
Suppressed them in our bodies.
Yep.
But that doesn't, they don't go anywhere, like, unless you feel them.
Yeah, dude.
So once you start actually, it's like every feeling that we had that we didn't want to feel is like, it like tied like an energetic cord to it that goes all the way back to the moment that it happened way back in the past.
Yeah, dude.
And we're constantly, this is the battling that our conscious and subconscious are constantly doing, trying to avoid, you know, shame of a dirty podcast or unprofessional podcast studio or whatever it is. Yeah. Which is really actually because of something that happened probably a long time ago that's fear of judgment. Mm-hmm. And then that also tied into all of the alcoholism and all this stuff. But if you can feel these feelings, you cut the energetic cord to what happened in the past.
Yeah.
And allow yourself to feel what it is that you're afraid to feel.
That's awesome.
And it hurts. It's super painful oftentimes. But that's, once you feel it, it's gone.
Yeah, dude.
Because that's what a feeling is. It's something that is meant to be felt.
Yes.
We're doing the opposite of it by suppressing it. So once you feel it, the thing that you were trying to escape from is gone.
Yes.
And you keep cutting these energetic ties to the past, and then you get more and more in touch with who you are now, because you're not pulling along all this baggage and trying to resist reality because of what happened in the past.
Yeah.
You get to actually experience what's happening.
Yes.
Without it being, you know, just all sort of different ways of avoiding potential feelings. You feel what you were afraid to feel and realize that you're still okay.
Right.
And then it's like, oh, okay, well, and then everything deepens because you're like, okay, cool, I'm not afraid to feel anymore.
Right.
So then if you're not afraid to feel, that also means like everything.
Right.
So when you resist any feeling, you resist all feelings, because it's the process of feeling that you are not doing. So you're suppressing, you know, any suppression of any feeling is ultimately the suppression of all feelings, not like permanently or anything, but you suppress your ability to feel.
Yeah.
So as you re-feel, keep feeling, then your ability to feel increases and everything benefits, like everything feels so much better.
Yeah, it's such a, I love the way you said that, man. I mean, it's kind of like, I feel like in a sense, I don't know if this would be really accurate, but it's somewhat accurate, but it's kind of like my experience with, like, you know, you talk about suppression of feelings and stuff, and that's so fucking accurate, because it might momentarily, you know, maybe when you're drunk or high, whatever, momentarily suppress those feelings of pain, but it's also going to fucking suppress your feelings of happiness as well.
Yes.
Genuine happiness, being able to like really take in a moment and fully, fully feel that. And, you know, I almost felt like for a long time, what alcohol did for me was it was kind of like that X-Men character that has the laser vision. In a sense, it almost felt like, and no, actually it's the opposite of the glasses. It kind of felt like,
it's like blinds.
Well, no, it just felt like the experience of getting drunk when I was experiencing so much pain is like, yeah, I would have, you know, there was a lot of power behind it. I'd have moments where I was having so much fun with my friends, but it was also like, I was causing all this crazy fucking destruction. You know, I had no control over my emotions. So it's like, if I was out with my buddies and, you know, if we were all getting fucked up, I might be having the fucking time of my life, but I also simultaneously might be getting kicked out of a bar for almost getting into like a fucking bar fight with a random person. And, you know, I'm also might be, I remember there's times I've been out when I'm like blackout drinking, and I've been blacked out and I'm like fucking crying. And I'm like, very like glimpses, you remember these glimpses, and I'm like, why the fuck was I crying? I'm like, you know, so your emotions are like this like crazy like X-Men X that X the heat Jesus Christ, I can't even fucking talk, the laser vision, where it's like all over the place.
Yeah
And so it's kind of like there's just no control over your emotions, really. And you know, and that's all I've ever wanted, is a sense of peace. And so I looked for that sense of peace in kind of like the drinking or the substance or whatever it was, because I just wanted to feel good. That's all I wanted to feel at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And so it's like, by getting sober, it's like you're putting the X-Men glasses on, in a sense. for that laser vision, and it's all, you have a sense of control over the emotions.
Really, like, maybe it's because when we have, you know, the feelings that we're talking about that develop in our childhood or throughout life that are too extreme to feel, generally it's like, it's sadness.
Yeah, dude.
It's really deep rooted sadness. Mm-hmm. And it hardens us.
Yeah.
You know, it makes you feel like, I'm never going to let this happen again.
So true, man.
And
so fucking true.
So understandable, especially from a kid perspective.
Yeah.
But it feels like we harden, and that's probably like the first time that we ever suppress an emotion. However that happens, we just decide to do it, and it's too much, and maybe we disassociate or we numb out, and
yeah.
And then it's like, okay, now I'm putting on this hard shell,
yes,
to make sure that I never experience, and no one
so
sees this.
So fucking true, dude.
You know, talking about the shame of alcoholism, and like, you know, shame is such a common thing in traumatic circumstances, or just, I mean, just life. Everyone has shame around things. And
of course,
really it's like, I want to make sure that no, like even like showing emotion is like, can be shameful. It's like to cry, whether you're a dude or a girl, like people are like, oh, it's such a, so much harder for, I think it's just hard to, it can be hard to cry if your perception of crying is vulnerability, which is tribally very dangerous, because you're not strong, and maybe you'll get kicked out of the tribe or whatever.
Or you might be crying in a fucking saber-tooth tiger shows up because you were fucking crying.
Yeah, you're so screwed. If a tiger sees you crying, you know.
He's like, that's my moment.
It's time to feast.
This dude's ugly crying right now.
Yeah, that's totally. That's a meal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it's funny how, like, I wonder if, you know how, like, in meats, like, they say, like, if you eat meat, you want to eat meat from a very happy, like, cow.
Mm.
A cow that was really happy and not, like, scared for its life when it like died and stuff. I wonder if tigers ever like thought about that, like, we need to get a human like when he's having like a really good day,
yeah,
like tastes way better or something. Right. Who knows?
Yeah, anyway. they walk away from the dude that's crying.
Yeah, that's like the ultimate defense mechanism, actually. Like,
no. That is the defense mechanism.
Yeah, right,
that's why we developed it.
That's right, that's why we cry.
Right, exactly. Yeah. You're like, dude, I'm crying
because it's safer.
Right, dude, saber-tooth tigers.
Yeah. No, but so this hardened shell that we develop, yes, and realize, oh, here's a way that I can not feel what I wanted to, that what I was feeling.
Yeah.
And then just boom, compounds for the rest of life until you start deciding to feel it.
Of course, bro.
Like my therapist told me something one time where she was like, when you suppress emotions, there's a finite amount of space to suppress the emotions into.
Mm-hmm.
So at a certain point, like if you think of it as like a jar full of like snakes, and like each emotion is its own snake.
Yeah.
And you keep burying these snakes in your body is where the emotions are stored. And they get all coiled up and it's all jumbled. And like at a certain point, you run out of room. And so you try to bury an emotion. And by pushing that snake down, all of these other emotions come up to the surface. And you start feeling things that don't even match up with what's happening in your reality.
Yep.
But it's just, you're out of room, and it's convoluted. And then you're like, why am I feeling all of this stuff? And it's like, because it's time. you've run out of room to suppress into.
Yeah.
And if you can get to the space where you know that whatever it is that you're feeling is good.
Yes.
There isn't a moment in life where feeling an emotion is bad. There might be wrong things to do about it.
Yeah.
But always feel. It's the quickest way to release yourself from the feelings that you don't want to feel is by feeling them.
Yeah.
And you know, like, and so it feels like once you let out some of the emotional steam of the kettle through, like, whether it's this car accident, which by the way, what a serendipitous accident. Or not even an accident. Oh, I mean, it wasn't. It was a pop tire or whatever it is. All this stuff that happened, like, huge inconvenience, but ultimately allowed you to release a ton of anger, enough anger to let you get into the deeper roots of the emotions.
Yeah.
The sadness and like all this stuff that, like, now you're releasing the stuff from, like, you know, when you get into the deep cries, that's when the stuff is coming up that's been so deeply buried that, like, you know.
Well, it stores up, man. It's like a fucking volcano.
Totally.
It's a volcano until, you know, this is the part where I don't know how volcanoes work. However, insert knowledge of volcano, but essentially there's so much stored pressure that at some point that volcano is going to erupt. And that's really what happened. I was a volcano erupting.
If my brain was a real person, either of our brains, and they were standing next to us saying real things that are said in our heads all day, I would sue my brain.
Yeah, for
sure. I would take my, I'd probably kill my brain, dude. I'd probably slit my brain's brain throat before I couldn't stand it, dude. I couldn't stand hanging out with somebody who says all this shit that I need to be worried about. I would sit down with
my brain and I'd be like, are we good? Are we good?
What happened?
And then my brain would be like, yeah, man, you're just not doing life right, though.
Yeah.
And then you're like, I'd be like, who the fuck are you to judge how I live my life? You're creating so much. Why can't you just accept, like, why can't you just enjoy life? And they're like, that's not why I'm in your life.
Yeah.
And you're like, that's exactly why we became friends in the first place, is you're supposed to like guide me through life in a beautiful way.
Yeah.
And they're just like, yeah, that's not what I signed up for. And you're like, what the fuck?
Yeah. Well, and then it's like, you know, realizing that no amount of anger will get the brain to shut up and go away. It's like recognizing that the brain is only doing these things that are reminding us of worries and all these things because it thinks that that's what's necessary in order to survive and avoid the fangs of reality or teeth or whatever it is, trying to make sure that we're not in danger generally from things that have happened in our childhood or just times in the past that we're trying to avoid now.
Yeah.
When, so it's like, oh man, I actually love you. Thank you for keeping us safe.
Yep.
We're not in these situations anymore.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about anything that happened when we were a kid happening again. And it's safe to let go of this hypervigilance and, you know, not taking a moment to step away from scanning for danger and just exist.
Yep.
But, you know, it takes a long time and like to like, you know, I think about like my brain has probably been quiet for, you know, less than like a few minutes over the course of my entire life.
Yep.
And those few moments in like deep meditation are pure bliss.
They're really powerful. Yeah.
The best, ultimate.
Yeah.
Which also I think is who we really are, because if we never had another thought again, we would still be here.
I agree.
If you and I stopped thinking right now completely, we would still be sitting in these chairs.
Of course.
So who are we beyond our thoughts?
Yeah.
Something or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So like we know that a reality exists outside of our mind and our thinking. And yet most of us are being bombarded by like negative chatter constantly to the point where it's like so frustrating. We get so mad at ourselves or just, you know, trying to desperately avoid these things that almost never, ever happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you start taking like the emotion that we're feeling, like the panic and all this stuff, and actually play it out in the scenarios in current reality that it's our brains latching onto, it doesn't match up.
Right. Everything is just a branch off of the exact same tree, which
much.
Is a fear, which is the tree of fear.
The tree of fear. And like underneath that is, well, it's the tree of yourself that you've put the lens of fear on.
Yep.
You're viewing things through this lens of fear, which it's like the fear goggles or the fear laser beam glasses.
Sure.
Like that is we're viewing reality through an avoidance of things. We're trying to avoid these things. So that's what we start seeing is things that we need to avoid. It is a waste of time from a fear-based perspective to feel comfortable in your reality and to feel good and to feel like, yeah, everything's fine, because that's dangerous. That's time being allocated away from dodging saber-tooth tigers.
I don't live my life like that anymore. I think the last time I lived exactly what you're talking about is such a fucking awesome point, man. It's like, I've been through too much pain to live my life like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's my feeling. I don't like, I have so much gratitude for life. I have a lot of gratitude for life because I know how many times I didn't want to be here anymore. I know the times that I've tried to take my life. I know the times that, you know, I know the times when I'm just like, this existence is so painful that I don't want this existence anymore. I'll take whatever the other existence is. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And
or non-existence.
The non-existence, right. And there were the moments in my life, man. I think, honestly, thinking back to when I was younger, when I was playing like lacrosse with my best friends on a team or, you know, whatever, the biggest stressor I had was, will we win our game this Friday? Or are we going to win the championship, which I know I sound like I'm talking out of a fucking CW show, but genuinely that was like what I would think about and like, what party are we going to this weekend? But it was a very much like the best way I could describe it was, it was like autopilot happiness where I don't even need to be the driver. Cause I'm like, I'm just on this road of life and let's just experience everything. And maybe some days I feel sad, but for the most part, I'm like, let's send it, dude. Things are good. I'm good, dude.
Yeah.
You know, it's like having it's like the autopilot of life. Everything's good. So just run life like that. Hell yeah. And then I went through the most excruciating pain of my life that I did not even think it was possible for a human to experience this much pain. Like literally going through feeling like an actual genuine, like, destruction of like your heart, of your soul, like a horcrux, feeling like waking up and feeling like you're in a nightmare. After I went through pain like that, I was like, I'm never doing autopilot again, because it brought me to this point. So clearly the machine, the autopilot, whatever it was, fucked up big time, because I went through the worst pain of my life. Now I am the driver in every single fucking moment of my life. And so I don't do this like, this free of like, respectfully, I don't run through life like, oh, life is, it's so bliss. And well, and I just, that's the almost like the old version of me, because, and this is my experience, of course, I'm not saying this is the right way to do life by any means, because it's honestly not, but I'm like, I have so much fear of going to that, experiencing that place of pain again, that I'm like, there's never for a second that I have taken my hands off the wheel. Because it's almost like I'm like this, like, I don't know. Sometimes it's weird. It's just like you lose your trust.
Yes.
I lost all my trust in this sense of like autopilot of everything's going to work out. Everything's going to be fine.
Right.
Because I went through the worst fear, the worst pain imaginable. So I had to come in, and it's like having someone else run your company. And then the company starts, you know, dropping in value and stuff. And you're like, whoa, CEO's got to come in and fucking start working the hours or running the restaurant, whatever it is. Yeah. And I think I'm learning to get back to, I don't even want to call it autopilot, but I'm getting back to the trust.
Yeah. Trust.
But I think there is certainly, you know, going back to what you said earlier about the shell.
Yeah.
The greatest loss we can experience in life is to change who we are based off of the pain that we've experienced. To change who we are in a sense of, I'm an angrier version of myself. I'm a meaner version. I'm a more closed off version. That is the greatest loss. That's one of the greatest losses we can experience in life, is to change who we are because of what we've experienced. You know, like you've been through a lot in your life, and you are genuinely one of the most present, loving, just kind individuals I've ever met in my entire life. And that's why I love having you in my life, because you're just a light to be around, man. And it's something that, like,
thanks, man.
Genuinely, yeah, it's like, it really just inspires me, man, because, you know, I've been through a lot of crazy pain in my life, and I know that there's parts of me that have changed, where I'm not as kind as I used to be. And I'm not like angry at myself about that, because I know that like, it's like a protection mechanism, because I don't want myself to go to that pain again. But just like it inspires me how you go through life, man. Cause it's just like, it's like this feeling of like, no matter what I go through, I'm not going to let the world change me. And I try to remember that, because I think there's definitely times where I'm like very fucking angry, And it's a version of myself I don't even recognize, because I never used to be like that. I used to be like this like innocent dude and very much carefree. But anyway, I just realized that, you know, pain certainly changes us in a lot of ways in life, and we do create that shell. And the biggest way that I took that shell off of me, for the most part, or at least got a smaller shell, was the first step I did was to like get sober, mm-hmm. because my addiction was my shell. I was like, I've been through so much fucking pain. I don't want to experience that again. And so I'm going to just continue to drink and drink and drink and just block out as much pain as possible. But obviously it was the creator of my pain. So it wasn't until, and my personality was different. I was mean, I was egoic, I was just vile. But it wasn't until I'm like, did the most vulnerable thing in the world, which was say, I don't have control.
Yeah.
I need help. I am a man, and I have weaknesses and flaws. And one of those weaknesses is my inability to control my drinking. Let me find help. Let me go to AA meetings. Let me get a sponsor. Let me give it up to God. And just, it has allowed me to come back in alignment with who I truly am.
Yeah.
And so the whole goal in life is to just hopefully not develop a shell, because underneath that shell are really fucking beautiful people. Mm. You'll be beautiful with the shell, but you'll never be your most authentic and true self. And that's the thing I love the most about you and respect the most about you, dude, is with all the pain you've experienced in life, you have no fucking shell. You're just fully present, fully authentic, and genuinely as an individual radiate love. And that's what inspires me the most about you, is it's an example that no matter what you go through in life, you can still come out of it a incredible, beautiful fucking person. And that is currently, that's the journey I'm on right now. That's my journey right now at, you know, 29 years old. And who knows? I imagine that's going to be my journey for a long time, but it's a good journey. You know, it's
I
a
love
good
you, journey. Dude.
Love you too, man.
Yeah. There's something, you know, a big thing for me is like worthiness and feeling unworthy of things. And it's really fun to be working on it, because it allows you to experience things that in the past would have been, you know, like I would have shut that down, you know, a bit, oh, dude, no, you know, like that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Maybe just because it's like, that's not really how I feel. So, and maybe this is something with like what Dana White was feeling. Maybe he didn't feel worthy of what Howie was saying. Mm. And he's like, I got to get out of this situation. And it just came out as, I don't want to do podcasting or whatever it is. But it's so fun to let things land. Like, it feels amazing to be like, wow, you're saying this to me, and I'm like not battling you, even if my mind isn't trying to control things. And like, because if I don't feel like worthy of what you're saying to me, I'm not going to, you know, I'm going to be trying to swat away these feelings. And,
of course.
And you know, it's just amazing to hear. And at the same time, it's like, this is absolutely 100% like a lifetime journey.
It is, man.
I'm glad that that's how you view me. And I'm like, at the same time, right there with you in terms of figuring it all out. Yeah. And you know what it is that I'm still holding on to. That sequence that happened with potentially messaging my friend today,
sure,
is a clear indicator of my mind has not yet let go of these things that I think I need to do. I'm trying to avoid potential, you know, negative interpretations and people being mad at me and all these things.
Yeah.
And a totally trusting space would be, I feel this way and I'm going to express it to you and not worry for a moment about anything. Mm-hmm. And if she ends up being like, fuck you, I hate you for sending me this message, okay, that's fine. I don't need to spend any time preemptively worrying about what it is that she's going to say.
Yeah.
You don't need to worry about what your friends are going to say about the introduction differences. You don't have to worry about people not, we don't have to worry about anything that's happening externally because we have no control over it anyway.
Yeah.
It's like when you're talking about taking the, you've got your hands tight on the wheel of the car and of your life driving through reality. You know, you have as much control over that car as you do the dude who drove the truck and caused that whole accident. Mm-hmm. No matter how tight you grip that wheel, you cannot ensure that another car will not crash into you.
Yeah.
Or that you'll get struck by lightning or that you'll hit a pothole or that anything could happen. The entire concept of control is an illusion. We think that we are controlling our external reality by thinking through all of these potential scenarios to avoid them. But in reality, we have no control over anything.
And I think that's why people, I think that's one of the biggest struggles with addiction is we feel like on a deep level, you want to try to control what you're feeling.
Of course, that's you what
wanna,
it is.
Right? You want to control.
Exactly.
You want to say no to the pain. So you're like, I want to numb myself out from this pain. I want to control how much pain is coming in.
Yes.
If I'm fucked up all the time, I am making the choice that I'm essentially saying no to this immediate pain that I'm feeling. Obviously, if you're an addict, you have no choice. There is no... You know, there is no control. That's hence the word addiction. It's loss of all control. You're addicted to the substance. Mm-hmm. The only choice you have is I want to stop completely and get sober. I want to make the decision to get sober. Hopefully you're able to, and through rehab and AA and all these different means. But losing control is the scariest fucking thing in the world. But I think also losing control, as you were saying, is loss of control is, in a weird way, loss of control can be, I'm trying to see if I can say this right. It's almost like loss of control is addiction, right? But loss of control is also acceptance. So it's almost like loss of control potentially was like, oh, I'm drinking all the time, right? When I was drinking all the time, I had no control because I was just drinking all the time. But I also lost all my control when I said, you know, I'm an alcoholic and I need help, because AA came in and took control of my life. So yeah, I was accepting that I'm no longer going to try to control my life and control the pain that I'm feeling by getting fucked up all the time. I am just accepting that this is where I'm at in life and I'm taking my hands off the wheel.
Right.
And I'm going to get sober.
Right. And then sort of,
it's got similarities.
I get it. It is taking your hands off the wheel.
In a sense it is. But also putting your hands on the wheel, 'cause you're like, I'm going to go get help and I'm an alcoholic.
Yeah.
But you're also like, hey, 12 steps, take me through, which I haven't even done my 12 steps yet. Right. But it's like, take me through the program.
Yeah.
The program is the wheel now and you're letting go. The program is grabbing onto the wheel for you and you're taking your hands off the wheel. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Which is,
I think it's sort of like recognizing that you never had control in the first place. Like, what we think we're controlling is like, such an illusory thing. Like thinking about controlling the emotions of your friends that are going to come on the podcast.
Yes.
The ones that you're specifically worried about were your best friends.
Yeah, of course.
Thinking that we're not. And that's because they have the largest weight of risk in terms of abandonment. But at the same time, they're also your best friends because they're not going to abandon you if you also love other friends of yours. But in the space of, I need to control, like, no matter how much control you think you're exerting on reality, you can't stop people from leaving you. You know, like, and for often completely different reasons. Generally, what ends up happening is a completely different thing than we were worried about. And then most of the time, even if we're right about what we were worrying about, the fact that we were worrying about it made no difference. Like, if you worried all from now until when you have your next guest on, who's one of your best friends, And they're, and you give them an introduction and they're like, yeah, that fucking sucked, man, compared to what you said to Sebastian. You'd be like,
they're like, dude, I listened to the full episode before this. What the fuck was up with that intro?
Yeah, dude, I only came on here so that you would give me a sick intro and you didn't even
you
do
just
anything.
Give them the intro and they leave afterwards.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that's all I wanted, dude.
Yeah.
That was fucking awesome.
But that's the thing is like, even if that was going to happen, like it would. Unless you're like, most of the time we just worry and we don't even take steps to actually like do anything about it. And mm-hmm. I think it's because on some level we know that this really doesn't like, on like a higher level, we know that this fucking doesn't matter at all. Mm-hmm. Like, but we went from total trust. I think that all beings come into existence in a total trusting space. You know, mm-hmm. there aren't kids that are born that are just like, fuck, I gotta make sure my friends, you know, aren't mad at me for this. I mean, I guess they have like primal design, you know, we're primally programmed to want connection and probably not have people be mad at us and stuff.
Sure.
But things happen along the way in
our experiences that shape us.
Right. And those experiences for both of us led us to believe that it's not safe to be on autopilot. You know, it was like the exact same way, like in high school and throughout and currently still in different areas.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
The more we give up control,
yes.
The more we realize that the things that we thought we were in control of, we weren't at all. And the only thing that we're really in control of is ourselves.
Yes.
Which is all we need to be in control of anyway, because that's all our whole experience is just what's happening here with us right now. And most of the time we're just tripping out about what everyone else is thinking about stuff. We just have no idea. They have infinite options of things to think about. And we think we've concluded correctly that it's something negative about us.
Right.
It's nuts.
Right,
but
dude. Right.
The more we step into the space of trust, the more we heal the feelings that made us think that it's not safe to be on autopilot.
Yeah.
The more we can release the fear of being out of autopilot or being in autopilot. Just release the fear in general. Yep. And then we can experience what's happening right now without fear and without trying to escape from this moment.
Sure.
And it's just like a constant cultivation of trust in yourself, trusting yourself in the same way that you beat your heart.
Yeah.
We have no idea how we're doing that at all. And yet we're both doing that.
I was thinking, it's so funny you say that. I was thinking about that the other night. Like, it's not often I think about that, but I'm like, what a crazy situation this is, that there is blood flowing from our heart to the rest of our body constantly and doing it, hopefully, if you're in good health, very well, perfectly, to keep us alive.
Yeah. That's who you really are.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing about like, if you would never had another thought again, sure, you would still be here.
Mm-hmm.
That's because that we're doing that.
Yeah.
We don't think of it as us doing it because it's not like I'm thinking to myself, beat my heart right now. But even if most of us never ever think to ourselves, beat our hearts, and we don't have to because it's just happening.
Yeah.
We don't think of it as ourselves. And yet, where do we draw the boundaries between that and anything else that I associate as myself?
Sure.
I think of as this is my nose because I can see it.
Yeah.
You know, but like, and I'm breathing constantly, you know, and there's like all this magic going on.
Yes.
That is completely out of control. Like there's no control element in that at all.
Yeah.
So if you can trust yourself to beat your heart and breathe and hear and all the stuff.
Yep.
What else can you trust yourself to do? That's all the stuff that you're doing completely without thinking about it. So what else can you do without thinking?
Well, I was thinking about it from that standpoint, and I'm like, even just that thing right there, I'm like, what a blessing that is, man.
It's the best.
Truly, like, what a crazy blessing it is, man. And, you know, just to like, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I imagine that sounds kind of cliche, but like, you know, what a blessing it is to be alive. But I mean, genuinely, to have like, just blood pumping through your veins and like you know when you're, it's easy to overlook that, take that for granted for sure, you know,
especially
what I mean?
If you're in a paranoid space.
Mm-hmm.
Most like it's the, what a waste of energy from the paranoid space to be feeling grateful for blood flowing through your body. That's time away from worrying about which friends are mad at you right now that you need to fix.
Exactly.
But the more you put attention on things other than the things that you're worried about, the more you realize how much there really is going on.
Yeah.
That's, you know, you can worry about like one little thing and there's infinite things happening.
Yeah.
You think like, you know, we're tripping out about like what our friends think about us, and yet like we just don't, how can we conclude anything about anything that's happening with anyone else when we don't even know what's happening within ourselves? We don't know how we're doing this.
I try to just not even do it anymore. I genuinely, that's the biggest thing I work on is like, I don't know. I think, you know, when I was drinking all the time, I was like a very egoic person. Like I was, you know, what I was, I hated myself. Most days I thought about taking my life, figuring out ways to do that. And so, and then I would judge other people. So it was a pretty, it was a, not pretty, it was an extremely miserable existence. And it was just constant judgment. And the biggest judger, you know, judgment was towards myself. It's like, because I hated myself, I hated the world. I hated those around me, whatever.
Sure. Yeah.
And it was like, when I got sober though, what it allowed me to do was almost extinguish my fucking ego. Do I still have an ego? Of course. Am I still a tool? Yes. But what it allowed me to do was just face my ego and be like, you gotta just, you know, it went from this giant NFL linebacker of an ego to a little like Pop Warner, you know, little kid where it's like, you're still there, but I'm so much more, you have such a measurable size to me, much a more measurable size to me now that is more manageable. And yeah. I think that is the genuine mantra for sobriety.
That's it, dude.
What is meant to be will be. And the mantra for, I guess, I don't even want to say all of addiction, but at least when I was drinking was, no, fuck that bullshit saying.
Yeah. No trust.
I am in control of fucking everything.
Right.
I'm going to drink when I want to drink so that I can, or I'm going to get fucking loaded all the time so I don't have to feel fucking anything and I can control everything. It's the polar opposite of it.
It literally is exactly the opposite. And that's what's so powerful about trusting people to tell you if something's wrong, is that you get to let go of all of the weight of anticipation, of preparation, of potential negative outcomes.
It's crazy, dude.
And like, we must do that because the alternative is a infinite realm of negative possibilities.
Of course, man.
That mostly don't exist ever.
Yeah.
But like, and this is such a, it's such a helpful thing with the control element too. Cause all, when we're talking about like our mind and brain and all these paranoid thing, it's all ego. That is all the same thing that's happening. It's just wanting to protect ourselves.
It is.
And when you actually start looking at the variables of what is available in any decision that you're going to make, it's unlimited.
Mm-hmm.
So we can't even begin, no matter how many variables we start to juggle, all these, which is really generally just like one thing, they're mad at me.
Yeah.
But literally it's infinite options.
Yes.
Think about like, if you were to quantify the amount of time and energy that we have put between the two of us into worrying about what people think.
Yeah. We could have built Rome.
Literally, dude, sure.
We could have built like five Romes by now.
We could, certainly mental Romes, dude. We could have built like fucking cities and cities and cities. I mean, just anything. Like we could have learned
Inception
like.
Inception level.
We could have learned Spanish cities. And then, exactly. Like worlds within worlds within worlds.
Yes, exactly. Like levels of overthinking.
Dude, we could do fucking, I mean, literally, it would be boundless in terms of like,
we are on the deepest level of the dreams with Ken Watanabe, waiting to become an old man.
Right.
Gray. Yes, with our overthinking. Exactly. And we need Leo to come save us.
Right. That's right.
Yeah.
So just, and then playing with that, experimenting with what happens if I don't do this right now.
Yes.
You can always come back to it.
Right.
Worrying will always be an option.
Sure.
But as we heal the parts of ourself that feel like we need to worry, we get to experience more, and even without healing all that stuff, you can still experiment with it. Conceptually understanding, okay, I feel the need to worry, but I can stop for a moment.
Yeah.
And if you can't stop, that's worth looking into.
Yep.
If you feel like you stop worrying for a moment and everything's going to fall apart, then you're really sort of at the, you know, breaking point. You can't take a moment away. And I get that because I've been there.
Yeah.
You know, if I were to stop for a second, then all of the worrying that I've been doing is for nothing. And it's all literally the only thing that's keeping me in control is this worrying.
Sure.
And then you just set it, you just take your hands off the wheel for a moment and see that it's a self-driving car that has your perfect destination in mind.
Right.
Not even a destination, like your point of existence in that moment is to be in the car. You're trying to avoid all this shit. And it's like, dude, I'm literally just sitting here right now. But I'm tripping out, literally creating horrific scenarios of people being upset in my head when in reality, I'm sitting in a chair. Dude, it's so funny too, because that's just the next hop. It's like, think of your ego as a bunny. Generally, what it will do is hop from worry to worry.
That's, I love that.
It'll just keep, the moment one worry is no longer a worry, you hop to the next thing, but you don't even realize how much energy you spent at that last moment, just fucking spazzing out. This bunny's just tensing and seizing out,
yeah,
panicking.
Yeah.
But you don't even consider what a waste of energy all that energy was worrying about, yeah, the thing that didn't happen. You just hop to the next thing. Yeah. But what's so amazing about it is that you're aware of it. You're not detaching from reality and distancing yourself and starting to think for any extended period of time about, like, oh my God, I haven't asked so many questions.
Yeah.
But you saw it. You see the thought, and then you get to decide. That's where the real control is.
Well, yeah, I'm very much aware of it. I mean, I would describe my animal as a bloodthirsty werewolf that is just going from happy moment, destroying everything in that happy moment, to the next happy moment, destroying everything in that happy moment, in terms of it's a overthinking anxiety werewolf.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, and that's just because it feels like it's dangerous to not.
The one thing I wanted to say was, just for the pod, is like, you've always helped me. You've guided me through different chapters in my life. So when I was at the point where I really wanted to make content, I hit you up, and this was 2021. And I said, do you want to do a sketch together called the job interview sketch? And you're like, dude, let's rip it. And we filmed that with our buddy, Jason. Shout out Jason Vicini, amazing cinematographer.
The best.
And dude, that was so fun to make with you. And you really helped me with, he said, we should put this on TikTok. And at the time, I thought TikTok was only for like teenagers who dance. Genuinely, that was my genuine thought of it. Yeah. And you're like, it's not. It's a whole lot, you know, bigger than that. And I really think this would be a good idea for you to put the sketch. And I remember I fought you so hard, and I was like, I'm just not going to. We can put it on YouTube. We can put it on maybe Instagram, whatever, but just no TikTok. And you're like, I totally understand, man. In somewhere or another, we're going to put it on TikTok. And
yeah, no,
it's
choice.
Because I love you, man. And it's really going to fucking help you, I promise. Yeah. And I was just like,
respectfully, you have no idea.
Right, exactly. And I'm like, all right. I think I probably told you a couple days later, like, let's just do it. And we put it on. And then you called me one night at like 2 a.m. And you're like, dude, I put the clip up on. I
put it on my burner account.
I
dude.
Put it on Camel Toe Ho, bro.
Camel Toe Ho, bro.
Shout out Camel Toe
no
Ho.
No followers.
Bro. No. How many followers did it have?
Zero. Maybe like maybe two.
Okay, maybe two. And by the way, Camel Toe Ho, bro, if anyone doesn't know, is the Rich T. Rosales account. It's the foundation of the Rich T. Rosales account. But you called me and you're like, dude, it's at 13,000 views. What? And I was like freaking out. And it's so ironic, because when all my videos started, like when a lot of my videos started going viral, if a video hit 13,000 views, I was like, how crazy is it? The same number that created so much joy for me at the beginning was the exact same number that made me feel like I was a failure.
Yeah. It's the lens.
It was the lens.
Yeah.
Because 13K to me, I was like, oh my God, dude, 13,000 people. I've never seen numbers like that before.
Yeah.
And then I get to like getting used to videos hitting, being honest, like a million views a video or something like that. When a video would hit 10,000 views, I would private it.
Yeah.
I would unlist it. And I'd be like, I can't believe that just happened. I hope no one saw that. Which is so unbelievably it just doesn't make any, it's horrible framing. It's such toxic framing.
What's so good about that is that is entirely within your control.
It is
change.
Entirely within your control. And so I remember
it's a perception.
Just,
that's what we have ultimate control over.
Yeah. Cause it brought me so much joy, and then it brought me the greatest agony when I would get those views. But anyway, you just like helped me with, I started making videos after that. Then the rich friend happened. I started doing the rich friend, and then I got to this next chapter, which only happened about a month ago, and I was sitting in your living room, and I was like, we were just talking, and I was like, I wish I could do this for a living. Like, I wish I could just talk to my friends for a living. And you were like, you can follow me. And here we are in the room you took me into, which is your incredible setup. And you just said to me, dude, essentially my studio is your studio. I want you to come in here and record and don't think twice about it. And this is exactly what you're meant to be doing. And so I just want to just thank you for that, dude.